Hello, and welcome to Biblical Breadcrumbs, and I'm sorry I missed last week. I've been sick, and you may well be able to tell. My voice isn't exactly what it should be, and so I'm trying to make up a little bit for last week, potentially, and go ahead and just get something out there. My voice isn't great. It's not going to sound wonderful, and yet, you know, I don't know, maybe it sounds cooler than it normally does. Regardless, I'm going to be using a different mic. I am not in my usual office setting. I'm actually at home, so I'm using my different mic, the mic I have here instead of the mic I have set up there. I'm using the New American Standard I have here because my Christian Standard is at my office, and all around things are a little bit more bootleg this week, but, you know, that's all right. And because regardless of, you know, what version of the Bible you're using, or what microphone this is being recorded on, or how well my voice holds up, or what timbre it is, or quality-wise, you're dealing with the same question, and we're dealing with the same setup. Again, this is a series that's meant to introduce you to who Jesus is. This is a series that's trying to communicate these truths about Jesus and ask these questions. I shouldn't even phrase it like that. We're wanting to ask the questions, is this true about Jesus? I believe it's true, but why is that? And so as we introduce you to Jesus, one of these most important things, the concept we covered last time was this idea, who then is this man, right? He's doing so many impressive things. He's saying a lot of crazy ideas. He's putting forward a lot of thought processes, and he's really challenging people's ability to think, who is this guy that he's allowed to do that? And that's the question that we have to ask and answer. Ultimately, Luke is trying to ask and answer that question when he recorded that narrative last week in Luke chapter 9, verses 18 through 22. You know, who do you say that, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Oh, he's just like some prophet guy. Okay, but who do you say that the Son of Man is? Well, he is the Christ of God. And Jesus accepts that, right? That's what we spent time talking about last time. Jesus accepts the claim that he is the Christ, who is the Messiah, the chosen one, essentially. He's that whole, like, chosen one idea. It originated with Jesus, right? Or it's culminated in Jesus. He is the ultimate example of the chosen one. That is who Jesus is supposed to be. He accepts that claim. He basically makes that claim. The Son of God, he has accepted that claim before. He essentially makes that claim by accepting it and saying, yeah, right? That's accurate. And he goes on with these titles, and he's just claiming them, right? And he claims them, and then in verses 23 through 27, he demands something in return. If he is the Christ of God, this is what you owe him. And it's a hefty price to pay. And so we're left asking this question, right? If he is the Son of God, I have to give him everything. Okay, then it's really important to know whether he is or not. Is he the Son of God? That's a really important question we have to answer. And maybe that's why Luke records this next. Starting in verse 28, in Luke chapter 9, beginning in verse 28, we'll read down through verse 36. This is, I have New American Standard, again, not the regular Christian standard that I usually use, but I kind of like New American Standard better anyway. So it's the Bible that I always study out of, so I'm more familiar with it regardless. But again, it's going to be the same basic message either way. Let's read Luke 9, starting in verse 28. Some 8 days after these sayings, he, that is, Jesus, took along Peter and John and James and went up to the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face became different and his clothing white and gleaming. And behold, two men were talking with him, and they were Moses and Elijah, who, appearing in glory, were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions had been overcome with sleep, but when they were fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. And as those were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah," not realizing what he was saying. While he was saying this, a cloud formed and began to overshadow them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. Then a voice came out of the cloud, saying, "This is my Son, my chosen one. Listen to him." And when the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent and reported to no one in those days any of the things which they had seen. Here you're dealing with disciples. Here you're dealing with Peter and John and James as Jesus goes up on the mountain to pray. And a crazy vision, a story happens to them. So this would be pretty normal. So firstly, the setup for this is 8 days later. So within the same kind of time period, they're kind of stewing on this question, who then is this Jesus? Jesus goes up on the mountain. He picks Peter and James and John to follow with him. And I say it that way because generally Peter, James, and John is the way we say that triplet. These are Jesus's inner circle. These are Jesus's closest three followers. Jesus had 12 disciples who were closer to him than the masses, but he had, in those 12 disciples, he had three disciples who were closest to him out of the 12. It's Peter, James, and John. And oftentimes it's expressed like that. Many people think that John was the younger sibling to James. James and John were brothers, and people think that John was the youngest of the disciples. And so, you know, there might be a reason that we put James before John because of age. And you know, superiority, that kind of thing. And so there's probably a good reason for why we name them like that. Peter, James, and John is the general setup. Again, when you go through the Bible, all these different sections, Peter, James, and John, it's this familiar triplet in that order. It's curious that Luke reverses those here. Peter, and then John, and then James. But what you have to remember is Luke promised from Luke chapter 1 in verses 1 through 4, this book was based on eyewitness testimony. This book was based on getting like personal interviews with people who actually saw these things happen. What's interesting about that is in Luke's record of Acts, in Acts chapter 12, this James gets killed, whereas John lives a long, long time, longer than the rest of the apostles. For Luke conducting an interview process in like the 40s and 50s, James was probably dead. He wouldn't have James as a witness, but he would have John. He would have Peter and John. And so Peter and John, and then James. It's a little touch that's just really bizarre. You wouldn't really think of it until you look at it, and it's Peter, John, and James instead of Peter, James, and John. And it's just ever so slightly different, but it's probably because of that eyewitness testimony claim. Even here, it's just kind of baked into the text. Luke says, yeah, I talked to Peter, I talked to John. James was also there. I didn't get to talk to him. He was dead, but I was told he was also there as well. And so you have this little bit of eyewitness verification baked into the text, and we don't even think about it. But Jesus takes these three, and he goes off to a quiet place to pray. That's something Jesus usually does. He goes up on a mountain to pray. That is an often practiced thing in that time, and even nowadays, oftentimes God or the gods are associated with the skies and the heavens. And so where do you go to worship or to pray or just like communicate with them? Well, you go up to a high place to meet with God because God is in a higher place. And so it just makes sense, Jesus following the tradition and the custom of the time. Nothing wrong with that. It's not a requirement, but there's nothing wrong with it either. Jesus grabs these three guys, his three closest followers, and he takes them to the mountain and to pray with him. And while he was praying, this weird stuff happens, right? We're asking who Jesus is. Jesus has just claimed to be the Christ of God, to be the important one, to be the anointed one, to be the one that everybody needs to look to, right? Deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me. Everyone needs to follow him. That's a huge claim. And here, it's being backed up. We have three guys on the mountain. At least two of these guys were alive, and Luke seems to have interviewed them to get this verification that these two guys are witnessing that Jesus, in fact, looked very different for just a moment. They went up on a mountain expecting nothing. In fact, they're starting to fall asleep, and then Jesus' face starts looking different, and then his clothing starts looking different, and they don't know what to do with this except to say, wow, something's impressive about this guy. Who could he be? Right? That's the question. Who is this Jesus? Who then is this that we're dealing with here? He's claiming to be someone important. He's claiming to be someone that everyone needs to look to. And then he starts glowing, right? That's a pretty good indicator that you're supposed to look at him. If he starts glowing, that's not something a normal human being does. Okay? That's pretty important. Maybe we should start looking to him. He starts communicating with two great figures of the Jewish past, Moses and then Elijah. Moses is really important because he's the symbol of the law. Oftentimes, the Old Testament Or there are specific books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, that everyone thinks are written by Moses. Moses gave the law. He took the law from God and conveyed it to the people. Oftentimes, the Jewish law is called the law of Moses. He is the symbol for the law. He is here talking to Jesus about Jesus's upcoming departure. Alongside him is Elijah. Elijah is another very famous character. Elijah is pretty much the first one we would think of in the line of the prophets. There were prophets before Elijah. Moses was actually a prophet before Elijah, and yet Elijah is used oftentimes to communicate foreshadowing about the message of God. Most of the prophets that we have, or that we think of when we think of Old Testament prophets, are probably the books that we have written about them or written by them. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea through Malachi, right? All of those guys. Those are the ones we usually think of, those like 16 or so individuals. Elijah was the first one in that line, essentially, is how that goes. And so Elijah is really famous. He's really, really important to them. Moses and Elijah, oftentimes considered to be the law and the prophets. And so what you have here is a picture of the Old Testament and the Jewish covenant talking with Jesus, the New Testament and the New Covenant, the originator, the lawgiver, and the prophet who's come to call people back to faith in God. You have Jesus, who's the culmination of Moses, being the new lawgiver. You have Jesus, the culmination of Elijah, who's coming to call the people back to God after an extended absence away from him. And you have Jesus here as the culmination, as the ending point of both of those guys, who is fulfilling both of their jobs to an even greater degree. And then you have Peter and James and John, who see these guys, and Peter starts talking. And anytime Peter starts talking in the Gospels, it's probably going to go poorly, right? Peter had a great standout moment of brilliance a few verses ago with the whole confession, "You are the Christ of God." That was good. That was really good. And if it ended there, that would have been better. But instead, 8 days later, he's still on this kick, thinking that he's saying all the right things and thinking that he's verbalizing all the right ideas. And so when Moses and Elijah show up, when they show up on the mountain, Peter starts blabbing on and he says, you know what we should do? We should build three tabernacles, temporary residences, a little bit like sometimes considered worship sites, but I think it's just like housing units. We should keep Moses and Elijah and you around for a bit and have you all spend some time together. And he equates Moses and Elijah with Jesus. Do you see that? We're going to make you all tabernacles so that you're all here. We're going to take you all and keep you all in the same area so that you can talk with the Jewish lawgiver. He was pretty cool. You can talk with that old prophet. He was a really cool guy. And you're a really cool guy too. I bet you're on their level. But God comes in to clarify something for them. Who then is this Jesus? You know who Jesus is? Jesus is not another human lawgiver like Moses. Moses was cool. Moses did great. Moses did a lot of really good work for God. He talked to God directly. He saw God face to face. That's like incredible. As close as a man can come to seeing God face to face, that is. Moses did so much good. Moses revealed the law. Moses was the arbiter and the mediator of the law from God to the people of Israel. That's incredible. But he ain't no Jesus. Jesus is Moses plus. Jesus is Moses, but so much better. Jesus is not only the conveyor of the law from God to the people, the conveyor of a new law. He is the mediator of the law, like Moses, but he is the means of the law. Right? His sacrifice is going to make that law into a covenant. His sacrifice is going to give meaning to both the old and the new laws. His sacrifice is done from a perspective, not of a human who is bridging the gap between God and man, but as God who's bridging the gap between God and man. As a God-man himself, who is fulfilling both roles by himself. Moses could only reveal God's will. Jesus is God's will. he's much better than Moses is. I love Moses. He's great, but he's no Jesus. And the same way with Elijah. I love Elijah. He's amazing. He's no Jesus either. Elijah is a very faithful prophet. He does very good work for God. He shows up when nobody else will. He stands up when nobody else does. He takes it to Ahab and he punishes the evil prophets and he proves that God is alive and active and he shows such faith. But he's not Jesus. He's not God. And God is offended when Peter equates Moses and Elijah with Jesus. It's at that point that a voice speaks from heaven. That, again, you have two eyewitnesses to this. These are not guys who are just hallucinating things. You have two eyewitnesses, Peter and James and John. You have three guys. Two of them were alive for Luke to interview. Two guys who are sitting there and listening to Jesus and watching Jesus and Moses and Elijah. That's not something that can happen. And then a voice speaks from heaven. That's not something that can happen either. But they're not just making this up, right? Peter is sincerely convinced to glorify all three, Jesus, Moses, and Elijah together, and something changes his mind, right? What changes his mind? A voice from heaven speaks. That's what he says. He hears it. And what does it say? It says that this is my son, my chosen one, and listen to him. And when that voice had spoken, Moses and Elijah aren't there anymore. And there's so much meaning in that one picture, but if I had to distill it down to one phrase, I should think of what phrase I would want to distill it down to. I can't make epic promises and then not deliver on them, but if you had to communicate this idea, what is it? It is that Moses was good and did incredible work, and God said, thank you for working. It's time for you to move on. Elijah did incredible work, and God said, thank you for being faithful, but it's time for you to pass the torch on to the next one, because now we have a new lawgiver, and now we have a new prophet, and this ain't no human being who just raised up from Israel. This isn't just another human being that God picked to make pretty cool and pretty excellent and convey his message through. This is God this time, okay? It's so much more than it was before. Jesus is God and man. He's both of them. That's something that Moses and Elijah can't claim. This is my son. Okay, that's what the chosen one is. Messiah, or the anointed, or the chosen one, whatever term you want to throw on it. Peter, you said he was the Christ, right? Do you know what that means? It means that he's the important one now. And Moses and Elijah were valuable because they pointed the way to Jesus. And that's it. Moses prefigured Jesus. He gave a law that prefigured the new law. He gave regulations that prefigured the new regulations. He gave the commands to Israel that looked forward to when there would be a new law to replace it. Elijah did a bunch of stuff to call people back to repentance because people need to know God for who God is. And how do you know God better than seeing God in the flesh? That is Jesus himself. Moses and Elijah, they are important, and their words still stand. The Old Testament's still a valuable resource for Christians today, but guess what? It isn't Jesus. And Jesus is so much more. He's the Old Testament plus a lot extra. He is the betterment of that, the fulfillment of that, the fullness of God's plan, all in one. God declares him so, correcting Peter's notion. Peter is stuck on this idea that Jesus is as great as the Old Testament people. What changes Peter's opinion of Jesus? A voice speaks from heaven. That's proof. Jesus has made some pretty big claims. Where's the proof? That's the proof. That a voice spoke from heaven and called Peter to wise up and listen up, because this here is the actual Son of God. They're confused, they're quiet, and they don't tell anybody about this for quite a while. Jesus has given them many things to think about in just this one little instance. He goes up on a mountain, and God glorifies him in front of people. What do you do with that, right? Who is Jesus? Well, you've seen some of his miracles attested to by many, many witnesses. You see here a miracle attested to by three witnesses. You see here just a miracle in which Jesus' power and authority is reinforced. What do you do with that? Those are facts, right? Those are things that happen from eyewitness testimony. You can't just throw eyewitness testimony out of court. So what do you do with the question, who is Jesus? That's something we're going to continue looking at. Again, this is not something that's going to be decided overnight, and yet time and time again, Jesus will make these claims, and then he will prove these claims over and over and try to give us something that we can actually work with. Question for you is going to have to be, where do you fall as you're thinking about this? Who is this Jesus? Well, is he just another human? Or is he something a little bit more? A lot of people in this world today have difficulty believing that Jesus could be more than a human. I mean, how can anyone just be more than a human being? But that's what we're being asked to believe. And so I understand that it might take a lot. But that's why there are 24 chapters in Luke. That's why it's not like two chapters, right? That's why there's so many evidence-based accounts of this, because God is really trying to emphasize this, that yes, this is real, and yes, this did really happen. And it might be incredible to believe in this faith idea that this might happen, but it did. How do we know? Well, here's all the evidence. And that's where we'll leave it this week. There's so much more to go into in chapter 9. I'm just going to skip to chapter 10 next week. And by next week, I probably mean in about 3 minutes when I'm done with this recording. We're just going to skip ahead. We're surveying this topic, this idea. Who is Jesus? Well, there are some thoughts to help you. And hopefully they help as you consider who Jesus is. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and I hope you benefited. This series, this show, whatever you want to call it, it is time-consuming when I really feel like I don't have time for it sometimes. It is disheartening when I put in the effort and, you know, nobody listens to it. And there's a lot of those episodes that I've made. I've been working on this show for almost 2 years now. What do you mean 2 years? Almost 3 years now. It was 2021. And a lot of times it's hard to get the motivation to do it. And so even tonight I was thinking, like, do I really want to continue this series? A lot of times it's like throwing stuff in the void, you know, making something, and then you put it on the internet, and then where does it go, right? And so many of the episodes have maybe one listener, maybe two listeners. Occasionally, I think I averaged three for a really long time. And so sometimes I have to ask that question, do I really want to continue doing this? That was the question I was asking tonight as I was logging in. I missed last week. I'm still a little sick. I could have missed this week. And would anybody really care? That's a good question. But then I opened up the menu and it said that last week or 2 weeks ago, last episode, 7 people listened, which is more than 3. And the episode before that, 9 people listened, you know, which is more than 1. And the episode before that, 7 people listened. And so, hey, if this is a benefit to you as one of the few people who are listening, thank you for listening to it. I'm going to keep doing it for you guys. If this is a benefit to you, if you think it would be a benefit to someone else, share it around. Let them listen or not. It's up to you. If it's blessed you, maybe it'll be a blessing to other people. I'm not one for self-advertising, so I'm not going to like let people know that I'm doing much of this. And yet, if it's a blessing to you, maybe you can help somebody else with it. I don't know. So that's up to your prerogative, but you're welcome to share if it's a help. Thanks for listening, sincerely. That gives me a reason to keep on doing this and expand it even, and maybe even do a little bit more. We'll see what I come up with as we keep going forward. Primarily, we're going to keep focusing on Jesus. We're going to keep looking at him and who he is and what he does. As we walk through Luke, as we walk through the rest of this book, we'll try to speed up the pace a little bit, not focusing on every paragraph, probably just one paragraph per chapter. But we're going to keep looking and seeing and experiencing who Jesus is, because I think it's really important that all of us, people who are not Christians or people who have been Christians for a really long time, it's really important that all of us get a solid understanding of who he is, because he is everything. And it's really important for us all to see that. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you benefited. God bless. And I'll see you guys next time.